Welcome to another interesting edition of The Work. I'm Ryan Basham. Our engineer, producer, and haysayer is Keith Johnson.
Hey.
And here's your host, Bonnie Gillespie.
Hey, everybody, and thank you for coming back for episode 8 of The Work. This is us behind the mic on Monday, February 21st, 2011. And I'm very excited because in addition to a whole bunch of quick news that we're going to zoom through and one little tip about pilot season for all the actors out there, we have some amazing guests in the studio with us today. And they are Steph Dawson and Russell Jeffrey.
G'day, mates.
G'day, how's it going?
Hey, how's it going?
And they're from Australia. So Steph and Russell are in the studio today and they're going to pipe in with us a little bit on news, but we'll do an exclusive interview with the two of them after we get back to Ryan for this week's headlines.
What an interesting week it has been. The LA Times is reporting that Michigan's new Republican governor is proposing to cut most, if not all, of state incentives for film. Last year, Michigan approved more than $100 million in film tax credits, and this year he wants to set aside $25 million for incentives.
This is a little heartbreaking because there are a lot of films that have been shooting in Michigan to take advantage of these fantastic tax breaks.
Well, it's kind of an interesting time for tax breaks across the board. Iowa is disbanding their tax incentives program altogether because of fraud.
They had huge scandals.
So it's in other states too. It's diminishing or going away altogether. I called this though when it looked like there was going to be a Republican governor landslide. I was like, there goes.
But
tax
is it
incentives.
A sign of Republican governor or is it a sign of the economy coming back a little bit and there not needing to be as much incentive for filmmakers?
Here's some numbers for you. In the state of Michigan, which in 2008 brought in over 100 movie and television productions, including Transformers 3, which is a Michael Bay film which was previously shot in Chicago, I believe, and the cop drama Detroit 187 on ABC. But in 2007, $2 million were spent on film productions in the state of Michigan, and in 2009 it was $224 million.
Interesting.
So, without these incentives, who knows? It took a long time to get to this place where there were incentives all across the country, and this economy is going to be an excuse to get rid of them, and then it's going to, unlike social services for people who have HIV/AIDS or homeless people or people with mental disease, it's going to be a lot harder to bring that money back when the economy turns around, I think. Deadline is reporting that the members of the Writers Guild board have put out a message to their members claiming that Comcast is aiming to destroy unions. Do we agree with that?
By what action?
It looks like they're trying to union bust. They don't want to allow Comcast writers to be represented by the WGA.
It's definitely shady activity on their part.
Well, this is everybody on NBC is going to be non-union writers. Everybody on Bravo is non-union writer. We're going to see a lot of craziness going on with that.
In other union news, the LA Times is reporting that the Cinematographers Guild is being forced by the Labor Department to hold a new board election after one of its members was, as they say, inappropriately disqualified from board elections. 89-year-old Haskell Wexler has two Academy Awards for cinematography for the 1966 version of Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf and the 1966 movie Bound for Glory.
And what did they say disqualified him?
That he has not spent enough time working at the trade.
Wow.
Isn't that phenomenal?
Wow.
That's
that?
Disgusting.
Isn't it?
Well, now hang on.
That's some bullshit.
Do they mean lately?
Maybe he's too old hat for them.
Let's go back to the Writers Guild for a second. You can't hold membership in the Writers Guild unless you've been paid a professional wage in the last 3 years.
And
so maybe the Cinematographers Guild has a similar
they
ruling.
Do. Well, they're, so, as an extension of IATSE, IATSE adopted a rule in 2009 stipulating that a member must work 120 days under union contracts within the previous 3 years in order to run for local office. So this challenges not only what the Cinematographers Guild does, but all of the IATSE subunions, I guess.
Very interesting.
Well, so then if the guy hasn't worked...
But so, he has. He says he's worked continuously on multiple documentaries in the last several years, but most of them weren't covered under IATSE contracts.
Yeah, that's because documentaries usually aren't.
So you can fall out of union membership if you don't work a certain number of hours within a certain number of years.
The Writers Guild works that way.
SAG should do something like that.
I know.
Boy, that'd be different.
The Writers Guild does that. If you don't work on contract in 3 years after your last qualifying gig, you lose your membership in the Writers Guild. It's good for union members to always be a little scared of losing their union's powers because it keeps them engaged and informed and involved.
I'm not going to disagree with that. That's good.
MGM, on the 18th, according to Deadline, laid off its entire digital department. That's a whole lot of people at once.
And these are the people who are in charge of their web presence and their
everything
mobile platforms.
Digital, all that
and
stuff.
Interesting.
Isn't that something?
Well, I'm willing to bet it's one of those union busted things.
Well, they're going freelance. They're going to use people who will work sure job to job
it's
rather
like
than
what the industry did a decade ago when they fired all the casting directors from the studios.
Right, and then people started working on projects rather than
and they
blanket.
Hired them back freelance and made them negotiate their own wages.
You bet.
I wouldn't be surprised at all. Neil Patrick Harris may direct a CBS pilot, close to signing a deal to direct an untitled Peter Knight CBS comedy pilot. It's from the people who did Crawdad Mandoon and Flaming Sword of Fire and Big Wolf on Campus.
That's exactly hot. The kind of work that Neil Patrick Harris should be doing.
Yes. So The Hollywood Reporter is reporting that King's Speech and Black Swan have jumped the $100 million mark at domestic box office.
And wow. Just in time for their Oscars, yes. Which yeah. They will be getting soon. Are yes. The Oscars a big deal in Australia?
Oh, yeah.
For sure.
Everybody follows it. Yeah. It's huge.
The LA Times reports that an illustrator suing DreamWorks Animation over the fun-loving panda character that is the central character in Kung Fu Panda. I've seen the comparison of the real deal of the DreamWorks version and this guy's. It's almost exactly the same.
Ooh.
So, but I mean, this happens a lot.
Very interesting.
People sue big Hollywood companies over things like that.
And then they settle and they made more money than they would have made to do it in the first place if
yes.
They had been hired. John August wrote a blog post about this that was very much on the exact same topic, and I loved it because he said everybody's really precious with their ideas and they like to, you know, keep things very close to the vest and don't share their concepts with others for fear of plagiarism when it's the talking about them that establishes you are the one who's developing that idea.
Absolutely.
And of course it is a race to get it produced, but if everybody who knows you knows, wait, that's so-and-so's idea, hang on, you know, it makes it a lot easier to keep your stuff branded as yours.
The Daily Telegraph of Sydney reports that the great American novel, The Great Gatsby, will be shot in 3D in Sydney.
Yeah.
Dun, dun, dun.
Take it over.
We'll take that one, thank you.
These states that are cutting film incentives, I think, well, that's fine. Those films won't shoot in any of the American states other than California. They'll just go to an entirely different continent.
I wouldn't mind going to Australia to shoot The Great Gatsby for a few
no.
months.
Yeah, no, I can
no,
handle
not
that.
At all.
Right? I'd get on board with that. Absolutely.
The leads in Lone Star have now booked pilots. So Lone Star, which was a Fox show last season, aired for 2 episodes, got next to no ratings, and now all of their leads are starring in pilots this season. So what does that say?
That says that doing a pilot, even if it doesn't do well, is a great way to make sure you're going to be invited into the rooms as a series regular the following pilot season.
Mm-hmm.
So it is never a bad idea to be attached to a series, even if it does a bad job, because
yeah.
It does a good job to help you become cemented in the minds of the casting community as someone who can lead a series.
That's awesome.
There's yeah. nothing like having your face on a whole bunch of billboards.
No, I think it's
too.
Just fine.
Well, that's it. I mean, it goes along the whole line of, you know, any news is good news. It's publicity. It can be bad, but that's still good. It means that you're still in
You've
the limelight.
Booked something. That's
yeah.
awesome.
Speaking of any news is good news, Deadline reports that Roseanne the Nut Farmer is coming to Lifetime.
Sign me up.
Roseanne Barr is back in primetime as the star of a 16-episode comedic reality series where she essentially is a nut farmer in Hawaii.
Awesome.
Right?
what type of nuts would they be?
I think that they are...
If it's Hawaii, it's
yeah.
macadamia
oh,
nuts for sure.
I freaking love macadamia.
Yeah. She said in a quote, "They've said Roseanne's nuts for years, and now I'm going to really make that a reality. It's all about nuts now, macadamia nuts." So it's going to premiere later this year, so keep your eyes peeled for that.
I shall.
Yeah. Right?
Ba-dum-ching.
So TV Guide reports that the Movie Guide Faith and Values Awards, this is an annual award show where they honor Christian, biblical-based morality stories.
So it's like the Razzies, but with Jesus.
More or less. So they claim that the 2010 box office favored movies with a strong biblical morality. They include films like The Chronicles of Narnia, Toy Story 3, and Secretariat as films that support that claim. I saw Toy Story 3, and I don't remember anything about the Bible or Jesus or God at all. But I think that maybe this organization is taking claim of all positive morality and calling that Christian.
I would say anything that could be paralleled to a parable, they're going to say,
yeah.
That's it, that's Bible.
Yeah.
That counts.
It's kind of creepy to me, and the people who are at this award show are people like Dean Cain and Pat Boone.
People with a lot of teeth.
Lots of teeth. What is that about? What is that about?
Seriously, those are people who use Crest right there. That's just like, and they use ivory soap. I mean, this is,
kind of hurts to look.
I totally get that.
Ding.
So take it for what it's worth. The Huffington Post reports that Camille Grammer has been hired to be CNN's Oscar correspondent.
Gross.
Isn't that disgusting?
Say that again.
Camille Grammer has been hired to be CNN's Oscar correspondent.
CNN, not Bravo's Watch What Happens Next.
Floundering in the ratings, doesn't have a voice anymore, CNN.
Gross. Gross yes. And gross.
Yes.
Moving on.
Deadline reports that Mitch Hurwitz, creator of Running Wild and Arrested Development, has written a piece for the British newspaper The Guardian called Mitch Hurwitz's Guide to Getting a Sitcom Cancelled. I think that's pretty funny.
I like the guide.
I do
that's
too.
Good.
He has some tips such as have a confusing title and try to do too much for a 20-minute program. Add a sparkle of incest. First impressions are everything, so screw that up if you can. And it goes on and on. It's really great. He talks a lot about making fun of minority groups and trying to get them to not come to the party at all. And he says that you have to offend the gay audience right away because they're the first to come to the party on something.
Oh, so yeah. So you better hurry up and alienate them.
Before they come. Yeah.
Aren't they all fashionably late?
No. Not the gays.
No, that's not
just Ryan.
Oh! Well, at least you saved me from the racial joke I was about to make.
Thank you. We are rated explicit, but not for that reason.
Oh, gosh. Yes. And that wraps up this week's news.
Yay. Thank you, Ryan. All right. So, as mentioned at the top, we have Steph Dawson and Russell Jeffrey joining us in-house.
Hello.
G'day, g'day. Okay.
So, let's...
down.
I'm so charmed by your g'day.
Now,
that's the thing. Everybody's charmed by the g'day. Let's talk about that. Do you turn up the Australian accent?
Not at all. What are you talking about?
Yeah, love. What's going on?
I can barely understand either of you. Considering you two have two of the most flawless American accents I've ever heard, it's hilarious to me when you...
You will be required to give examples in a
crikey.
Minute.
Yeah, sure.
So you do. You turn it up.
Well, I think that's like... I think there's something that people find charming about our accent, which I'm still baffled by, because to me it just sounds pretty ugly.
Yeah, and it's like the stronger our accent, the more we push it, the more reaction we get, and it's kind of like we feel kind of, we don't have the expression here for it, but bogan, which is like, I guess, really... Ocker, really uneducated.
Like, oh, yeah.
We feel uneducated sounding really Australian.
The word you're looking for is hick.
I was going to say, that's me being from the South hick. And sounding right. like a hick. If I say y'all right. or if I really turn up the Southern accent, it's like, yeah, you're a hick, you're uneducated, you're...
Having said that, a lot of people will be charmed by
they
the
love
Southern
it.
Accents. I do.
I get a lot of people who are disappointed that I don't have mine anymore.
Yeah.
And you turn it on when you need to.
I do. Mm-hmm. I do.
I know you do.
We know.
So tell me your situation, Steph. You're here in L.A.,
indefinitely.
Forever. Yeah.
I've got an O-1 visa, so that's for 3 years, and at the end of that I'll either do another 3 years on an O-1 or probably upgrade to a green card.
And how does one get an O-1?
It is quite a lengthy process. You have to kind of prove that your the actual title of our visa is an extraordinary alien.
When I first met you, I thought one extraordinary alien.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. So you have to pretty much have all this documented evidence to prove that. You have to have 10 letters of people, top industry people, saying that they've worked with you. And
Australian industry people?
Australian or American, actually. Okay. Just as long as...
They just want to say that you're extraordinary. Or evidence that you're extraordinary.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then, Russell, what's your situation? You're here shorter term.
I am here shorter term. I don't have the visa just yet. I'm working on that one. As a subsequent thing, I've actually taken a visa for Canada, so I will be basing myself now in Vancouver.
Which, there's plenty of work.
Yeah, which is plenty of work. And it was actually casting directors that actually suggested that I do that. So I'm basically following their advice and heading up there.
Will you be allowed to work in Canada while
you're... Oh, yeah.
Then you need to do that.
Well, then.
Yeah. So what they have is, through the Commonwealth, they have a visa set up, which is a working holiday visa, and you would basically get that simply by having an Australian passport or a passport from the Commonwealth and a clean record. So you don't have any offences. You haven't robbed a bank.
So you were able to hide all the...
So, you know, they didn't find out.
Really, when you go loyal. Undercover for the cops, they will expunge your record.
I promise we aren't going to air that, man.
So I have actor friends who are upset that the American, like the Screen Actors Guild and the AEA, don't protect American actors from having their jobs taken by foreigners. Do you deal with people who, on the flip side of being charmed by your accent and stuff like that, resent you being here, or...
Absolutely.
Oh, you've encountered that.
I have. I can tell you, I went into just a local retail store, and I was buying something, and just struck up a conversation with the guy who was serving me, and he found out that I was an actor, and he was like, oh, you know, I'll help a brother out. And I'm like, okay, cool, cool. And I didn't know what he was doing. He wrote down an acting coach for me and the contact details, and I went, oh, that's really nice. I just thought, wow, you know, how friendly is that? So then he started asking me a few more questions and found out who I had met and what meetings I'd had, and I just watched his face drop. And so by the time this conversation had ended, I felt like he was like, get the out of my shop.
Wow.
He was just like, get out of my face.
Because you'd had greater opportunities than he had had in terms of meetings and connections.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's apply some context to that for a second. One of the things that our listeners need to realize is that there are many, 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 many Americans who come to Los Angeles who want to be an actor, who claim to be actors, who have no business in the industry whatsoever. By the time someone has worked in Australia to the point that they are ready to make the jump across the Pacific, they are at a level of professionalism and craft and integrity that jumps them ahead of 80 to 90% of everyone in Los Angeles, including people who get paid to act regularly. So let's cut the Aussie some slack a little bit.
The level of craft that I've seen in the Australian actors I've met, both in my travels to Sydney and here, has just been a tier above and two tiers above so many of the actors that I meet who move here from wherever else in the country. And
first of all, there's an expectation to go to drama school,
which isn't true for Americans.
3 years before you like hit the ground running working. So for me, I did 4 years training before I even started working, 3 years doing full-on drama school and then a year of straight film after that.
And there are so many people here who will just start.
Yeah.
I guess so.
Yeah.
I think that's...
Yeah, no, Steph's right.
That's probably maybe also we've had a good following before us from people that have done well here. So I think that's why there is the people expect a high level, and they generally get that because we work our butts off.
Now, in the schools at which you train in Australia, do they use those people who've come before you and blazed a trail into the States as bait and say, you know, Nicole Kidman trained here? Or, I mean, is that a part of...
I think sometimes there's definitely, like with NIDA, one of the biggest schools there, they definitely do that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I honestly don't think it really matters where you go. It's just training and working. I mean, there are no rules as long as you work hard and are prepared.
And well, then that's the rule, is the working hard. You know, that the working hard is what pays off and makes the difference.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what are some of the differences you've found here compared to how you pursue? What's the day-to-day for an actor in Sydney versus an actor in Los Angeles?
Mm.
Well, it's a lot less proactive, I guess you could say. To say something?
Yeah, I don't really... I think you have to be very proactive in Australia because there's less work. So I suppose there's same proactive, but
okay,
there's less auditions.
Yeah, okay. So that's probably more... Steph's kind of corrected what I was saying. It's just that there are less avenues to take to be proactive. You know, like we find that it's very much a case of you go through your agent for everything. As far as what you can physically do as an actor, being self-sufficient, as in self-managing, you get a lot of closed doors.
So it really is you wait for your agent to call and set up the appointment in Australia, and then you go and you meet the casting director.
I suppose, but I've found that a bit different. Like I think I've had some of my best auditions without an agent. So there definitely are avenues for you to be proactive even in Australia if you know you're right for something.
Mm.
But that is rarer for someone to be open to that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so what have you found in terms of openness here?
I think like you were saying, Bonnie, like it in Australia it starts at a no to some degree. Yeah. Whereas here it's sort of like you said, let's see what you can do before we say no to you.
I mean,
it doesn't matter what you've done back there, they're willing to give you a go.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, as Steph said, you have to sometimes fight to get yourself heard, even if you think that you're right for the project. And so I guess when you are doing that, you absolutely have to make sure that you are a dead ringer for that character, because it's just most casting directors in Australia don't talk to you on a one-on-one basis. They're much more approachable here, which is very refreshing.
Although I think like Australia could take a leaf out of the American books as well about, you know, sending updates on how you're doing and this kind of thing with postcards and all of those sorts of tools that you can use to keep in touch with people.
So in Australia, how much of it is what you can do and how much of it is who you know?
I think there's a hierarchy of agents, like kind of, I guess, like what there is here. we're seeing a lot of the same people on the television shows all the time.
It's recycled.
Which is a little sad to see. Is pretty much why we kind of venture out into the bigger sort of playing field over here.
Absolutely, because that's the thing that we find is recycled, actors are recycled over in Australia, whereas here we find that they're much more open to finding unknowns, you know, getting fresh blood, fresh meat in front of the camera, you know, trying something different, taking a risk. They seem to be more concerned about ensuring that they're getting a known brand, so they're going to get... a sure thing, as in they're going to get the money coming back to them because they've got this name. In the show.
It sounds to me like New York, and how we've always talked about how New York actors are a part of a very small repertory company, and it's why we'll see so many of them on all the series that are shot in New York over and over and over again. Whereas here, it's always new faces, which gives everyone an opportunity to have a shot at it, hopefully. Yeah. Well, I think everybody wants to maybe be the one who discovers, and I hate to use that word because, of course, you've not been discovered, but you've had a light shown on you.
Yeah.
I think everybody loves the opportunity to maybe be the person that you thank when you stand up and hold something gold and shiny.
Yeah.
And
so,
So what tips would you give to anyone moving to Los Angeles or beginning the pursuit here on how they could prep so that by the time they get here, they are as prepared as they possibly can be?
Well, obviously training. First, you know, to get techniques under your belt and things like that on screen, and maybe some theatre training and things like that. For if your Australian-American accent is huge, you have to be working on that the whole time. I feel you have to have a showreel, whether it's something you did yourself. You have to kind of have something ready to go because...
people want to see your work.
Yeah. How can you prove it if you just, you know...
I'd sum it up in two words, hype and momentum. It's just a case of everything that Steph just said. It's about the momentum part is more for yourself, because it's a case of not feeling like you're sitting dead weight, like you're not moving, not doing anything. It's a flow on effect. If you're working on this and you're working on that, you've got better energy when you're meeting people. You're just more engaging, and you've got more to talk about too, because you're not going to be able to start a great conversation if you know somebody says, "Oh, so you know what's been happening," and you're like, "Oh, you know, not much. Taking a great class. Come over to LA to see what happened." You know, rather than, "Well, you know, I've just come off the back of working on this pilot that I'm trying to write with a couple of my friends. I've been just taken up doing Bikram yoga, which is amazing." You know, like,
"Have you, Russell?" Really?
No, but I just thought... I was just trying to think of something obscure. Wow, look at that. Like, as a conversation starter, you know?
Yeah,
it's all about having that, as I say, momentum, and then having the hype about you, because at the end of the day, that's what's going to excite people.
I definitely think that referrals really help as well for a lot of people coming from elsewhere, because I found that everything that's happened for Russell and I and a lot of my Australian mates, sort of the meetings we've had have been referral basis.
And how do you get a referral? How do you start getting introductions before you're even here? How do you plug in with those relationships?
Well, I think it's like a track record of working with people, and whether that be with your agent or casting directors from Australia.
Absolutely. I definitely think it's really important to make sure that you've done your research before you come here.
Amen.
You've got to know what's what. You've got to know who does what, because you know, you can really make a big faux pas if you don't know what's going on or what somebody
Absolutely.
Does. You know, know your stuff.
Mm. Very good. Great. Guys, thank you so much. Russell Jeffrey, Steph Dawson.
Thank you.
So grateful having you both in the studio with us. And good luck on the rest of your time here.
Thank you.
May it be decades.
Yeah.
Woo! That's right. Well, okay. So let me do a quick tip for the actors out there regarding pilot season. And I came up with this one thinking about what Ryan talked about with the actors from Lone Star and how they're all attached to series now. One of the things that people forget or focus on, and they shouldn't focus on, with regard to pilot season is they say, "Well, I need to get out for a pilot. And I say, you know what? Your job may be to get out on all the indie films and all the ongoing series that pilot level actors are being held from auditioning for. And so let me back into that a little bit. Let's say I'm an actor who has been a top of show guest star and recurring, and the past couple of seasons it's gotten busier and busier for me doing that. That means probably this coming pilot season I'm going to be on a short list to be a series regular on a new pilot. my agent is going to say no when I am offered recurring and guest star roles on existing series or leads and supporting characters in studio films and indie films, because they want to keep me available to test for pilots as a series regular, because that's where the real money is. And if I am an actor who has only ever had co-stars, my job is to start trying to slide into the guest stars that are now free, because that actor is no longer available to take those because their agent is trying to get them out on pilots. And so I believe a lot of actors get here and they say, pilot season, I want to test on a pilot. And I say, no. If you've never done it before, pilot season, you want to start working on the series and the films that the pilot level actors are now not working on.
Interesting.
It's a different approach, but I think it's a good mind shift to have to keep you from going crazy and feeling like shit that you're not going out on pilots. Mm.
Mm. How often do you hear someone say, oh, I'm going to go to LA for pilot season?
They still say it.
Yeah. All the time. Yeah.
You should hear Australia. Like, Australia, there's actually right now a whole boatload of Australians that have arrived here for pilot season.
Living at the Oakwood, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Living in their cars, some of them, you know?
You look at the Oakwood, you look at the different long-term housing situations that are in Los Angeles, and they make all their money during pilot season. They're begging people to stop to saying that no, there's not really a pilot season anymore. They want people to say no, there is a pilot season. It's January 15th to April 1st. Everybody has to come. That is the time that you have to be living in LA.
So many people making money off of actors that way.
That's not news.
You can tell, right? You can tell a novice by their desire to be in LA for pilot season if you don't already recognize them from their work.
That's a great point. Mm. I have an invitation to Hollywood Happy Hour Breakdown Services Casting About Actors Access event. Could you have any more sponsors? Breakdown Services, Actors Access, Casting About, and Hollywood Happy Hour are producing a free event on Monday, the 28th of February, 2011, at 6:30 p.m. at an undisclosed location, because you must RSVP to receive, it's like a rave, to receive the information on the location. But it is free, and we would love for you to learn more about it. And the way to do that is to be a member of the Hollywood Happy Hour Yahoo group. And I will include a link for that in the show notes for today's episode.
How exciting.
Awesome. Yay.
Well, we have a little bit of not really news about Lindsay Lohan, and Keith has brought that to us. What's up with Lindsay Lohan, Keith?
Well, sources close to Lindsay say that her mother is arriving today, Monday, and that Dina Lohan will be sleeping on Lindsay's couch. Some home designer person built her a $10,000 couch that Dina Lohan will be sleeping on.
Yeah, why a sofa? Lindsay's like, you can sleep on my bed and I'll sleep on the couch. And she's like, screw that. I'm sleeping on the $10,000 couch, yo. Yeah.
Hey, it's going to be more comfortable than the couch I'm sleeping on.
So, there you go.
I would love to think that Dina has an interest in her daughter's well-being above and beyond using her for
you would like to think that,
yeah,
but the entire last 20 years would beg to differ.
The sign of a mother who is more concerned about herself than her daughter who happens to be addicted and really fucking up is a mother who will take a reality show about her life. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, it's just unacceptable.
One last thing, I think we have received our first tweet interaction
that
I'd like to share on the air, and this comes from Devin Wilmot, who says, I like that The Work is labeled explicit on iTunes. Mm. Who knows what I'll hear? So technically not a question, but since it ended with a question mark, I've decided that is our first ever tweeted question from a fan of The Work.
But we should explain why we have that label. You know, we talk about the industry in the news and all that stuff. Why would that be explicit? Well, the reality is that when we talk about the industry, we're talking about who's sleeping with who or what kind of relationships exist. And you never know when a blue topic is going to come up, because you know, Charlie Sheen rehab is not fit for kids. Lindsay Lohan's life is not fit for kids.
You know, I figured you labeled it explicit at iTunes because I kind of get Tourette's when a mic is on.
No. Well, and you know, we will drop an F-bomb on occasion. I think I just did.
I know I did.
I blinked myself, but
you
I
did.
You didn't need to.
I did.
Do you
want to
say fuck now?
I can say fuck right now.
You know what? We will clean it up if we get nationally syndicated and have to because of the FCC, right?
Who says?
Maybe.
So the short answer to the question is the reason that we're explicit on The Work is because there are times when we talk about things that kids shouldn't be hearing, and rather than police ourselves, we would much rather be open to telling it how it is. Yeah.
So this is really just also a way to remind you that we are now officially on iTunes. There are a couple of episodes not yet posted there, but they will be coming. And we hope you will subscribe there and rate.
Rate and review.
And review and tweet us at @the_work. So that we can stay in touch and feature your tweeted question on a future episode.
How exciting! Thank you for joining us for another edition of The Work. I'm Ryan Basham. Our engineer, producer, and haysayer is Keith Johnson.
Hey.
And our special guests have been the Aussies, Steph Dawson and Russell Jeffrey.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining
Thanks
us.
Thanks for having us.
And your host, of course, is Bonnie Gillespie.
Thank you, everybody, for coming back for episode 8 of The Work. We will see you next week after the Oscars for episode 9. And until then, keep creating.